Namaste, ladies and gentlemen. Today, our medical director and one of my absolute favorites, Dr. Sally Sennett, and I were here to discuss the expert panel review of an extravascular and an implantable cardiac defibrillator. Yes, you heard it right. It is an ICD, but it's extravascular. This is, in fact, one of the last reviews to be published to date from the expert panel's table, and the findings are rather consistent with the heightened level of scrutiny in the EU. And to be frank, it's a bit of a rap on the knuckles for one of the larger notified bodies, which in this case happens to be TÜV SÜD. So let's get right to it. Sally, what's the device all about? What's it indicated for? And what were the aspects that triggered a CCP review, apart from the fact that it is a Class 3 implantable?
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Now, as you've already said, this is an ICD, an implantable cardioverter defibrillator. Now, this one is considered novel because of the lead placement and also the procedure which is required to actually place it in the first place. This is be done by an electrophysiologist. It's a new procedure, and this would actually require a general anesthetic, unlike the other ones. Now, just to put this device in perspective, it is new, so we're wondering why was it developed in the first place? Well, the devices currently on the market can be broadly categorized into two groups. The transvenous ones, where you enter via transvenous route, and the leads are actually placed intravascularly inside the heart. Now, the other sort, which is slightly less sophisticated, but is a subcutaneous, whereby the leads are actually outside the sternum, outside the chest wall. And it has much more limited functionality. So what they're trying to do with this design is capture some of the clinical benefits of the transvenous ICDs, but avoiding some of the adverse events that you would get, which are things like vascular damage and thrombus and embolism and infection and these kinds of things. So that's a device. So it was brought to the expert panel because it's novel, novel device, novel procedure. So, okay, Jay, I'm going to turn it back to you now. So what data sets did they actually were provided for the to the expert panel, and what do you make of these?
What data sets? There were multiple data sets, Sally. What do I make of this? I think the manufacturer threw everything they had at
For
it to see
sure, for
whatever
sure.
sticks. And when I used to be a reviewer, I was always uncomfortable about studies that whose data sets primarily revolve around early human feasibility studies, because those are more range finding. But anyway, in this case, there were three early human feasibility studies, one pilot study, and a partial data set from a pivotal study, right? And Sally, you really laid the groundwork excellently, saying, okay, there is a transvenous angle to it, and there's also a subcutaneous angle to it, because we know there is a subcutaneous ICD that's CE marked. Now, when it comes to the actual data set, there were aspects of disagreement with the notified body and the manufacturer, and there were aspects of agreement. So let's focus on the disagreement aspects, because that's important. That's where we learn from, right? The expert panel disagreed with the notified body in terms of its comparison with the transvenous ICD. And the reason for this was that there was a new lead connector design, and also the software used needed adaptation to realize the device under evaluation. Moreover, panel considered that the technical specifications for this device were novel, and almost certainly that the implantation technique involved was normal, was novel, sorry, not normal.
Sure.
Now, in fact, they went a step ahead and they listed nine residual risk items specific to this device relative to the transvenous and the subcutaneous ICDs. So let's move on to items that they agreed with the notified body about. Panel accepted a database conclusion that there was a low risk of intraprocedural complications, and they also agreed that there was a low risk of lead extraction in the short to medium term. Now, that leads me to discuss what was left to be desired from an expert panel perspective. They were concerned about the rate of inappropriate shocks, infections, lead dislodgement, and ATP being switched off, ATP being anti-tachycardia pacing, being switched off due to painful pacing, especially in the pivotal study. Now, summarily put, it was a recently published pivotal study data set that was not part of the original data set that was provided to the notified body for review that actually spooked the expert panel.
Yeah,
So,
for
point to
sure.
bear in mind here is that the expert panel is conducting their own hand searches to aid with these reviews. They're not going exclusively by the CEAR submitted by the notified body. Okay. Consequently, the expert panel wanted a more detailed analysis of the pivotal study's data. They specifically requested for more follow-up data in connection with lead stability, anti-tachycardia pacing efficacy, pacing tolerability, and risk of infection. They actually maintained that the residual risks were not adequately mitigated. Also, yep. The absolute rate of complications at 6 months was high at 7.3%.
Yeah, it was.
And the last one here was that there wasn't any data to substantiate claims around improved battery life or fewer inappropriate shocks. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, very good, Jay. What about any other interesting findings or omissions? Anything else you want to develop from that?
Oh, you use a nice word, omissions. So let me latch onto that one. Actually, the expert panel was okay with the PMCF being a long-term follow-up of the patients who were already implanted and annual literature reviews. To be very frank, I'm a little confused by this position because for a novel device with a novel implantation and deployment procedure and a concerningly high complications rate, is that enough? Now, I understand that the intraprocedural complication rate was low, but that's really in the confines of a controlled clinical study.
Exactly.
So, don't you want to understand what happens outside the closed confines of a clinical study for a novel device like this? I thought that position left a little bit to be desired. And to me, that counts as an interesting omission.
Absolutely. So I think one of the specific questions in the report was, you know, what did the expert panel make of the PMCF in light of the intended purpose, the indications? Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a bit of a disconnect there. The intended, the indications for that clinical trial were actually quite limited, whereas you're talking about a kind of much more real-world evidence-type scenario, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And actually, Sally, I'm glad you brought that up, because if you really think about it, the inclusion criteria for the pivotal study, right, they study this device on patients with class 1 and class 2A indications.
Yeah.
But the indications for use statement doesn't really specify what happens to patients presenting class 2B indications.
It doesn't.
So that to me leaves a little bit to be desired yet again. And then the fact that device lifetime wasn't really discussed. Yeah, it was discussed in terms of there not being enough data to support improved battery life, but there wasn't any mention about what was the actual device lifetime that was claimed for the device by the manufacturer. That to me could have been a significant learning, but we didn't really get much on that front. Again, moving on to interesting findings, they were strongly concerned about the high rates of ATP switching off, high rates meaning about 25%. They were concerned about the limited efficacy of contactless pacing, leading to limitations in patients with known and frequent supraventricular tachycardia, right? And also, I think patients with previous cardiac surgery were not studied, and they're unlikely candidates, but that didn't figure anywhere as far as the indications or, you know, warnings, precautions, contraindications are concerned. The expert panel recommended that these items be considered towards a streamlined indication along with a potential contraindication to future epicardial access for ventricular tachycardia ablation. Yeah, those were some of the additional interesting findings, Sally.
Very good. Okay, so in light of all of that, the expert panel spent quite a lot of time talking about benefit risk.
Yes.
In quite a detailed way. Can you comment on that, Jay?
Yeah. Once again, there were aspects that they agreed with. There were aspects that they disagreed with in terms of the benefit risk proposition that was forwarded to them. Items that they agreed with. They were happy about the benefits associated with a smaller size and the design for MR conditional labeling. An important item is that with respect to this device, it allows access to ICDs for those patients who can't receive a transvenous system. There were additional benefits as far as low systemic infection, low risk of embolism, SVC tears, vascular tears in general, and also lead extraction related injuries. There were items that they disagreed with, and this is to do with comparison with a transvenous system as well as a sub-Q system. Let's take the comparison with a transvenous system first. They disagreed that this extravascular ICD system is expected to have a lower risk of procedural complications. In fact, the six-month complication rate for this device is at 7.3% in comparison with the transvenous system, which is approximately 6%. So numerically different, right? In fact, this the expert panel's biggest concern was a recently published pivotal study data that, in their opinion, did not show that the safety and performance of the device under evaluation is comparable to a transvenous system. So that's one thing. The other thing is the higher rate of P-wave oversensing and the rate of inappropriate shocks did not provide a benefit over and above, or for that matter, even in comparison with a subcutaneous ICD. Again, no data from an improved battery longevity perspective. So these were the items that, you know, there were aspects that they disagreed with as well as agreed with when it came to the benefit risk analysis. Sally, lots that I've tried to unpack in here. And there's a lot of data.
Indeed. And all of this is basically based on 6 months of data for a permanent implant.
Exactly.
So already those trends are really looking questionable, the high rate of adverse events and the pacing issues and stuff. So yeah, absolutely.
Very, very true. So, you know, and I know you've been listening to all this patiently. I know you have a lot to comment in here. Can you please tell us what are the key takeaways from your perspective?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if we come back to the manufacturers and what they need to do and think about, is this is clearly a very detailed expert panel report. And these people really, they know their stuff. So I think, first of all, it's really that it's really important that a manufacturer sort of develops a properly thought through clinical development plan, leading from the first in man studies, feasibility studies, with a logical progression through the studies in order to support
Excellent
the claims
point.
And the indications that they want, and to adjust depending on the results. And I think if they think that through carefully in the beginning, they're going to make the process as efficient as possible. And I think the other thing is that manufacturer needs to really know the state of the art, standard of care, and keep referring back to that. The benefit risk has to be evaluated in the context of the known state of the art. And this is particularly important with a new device where there is nothing really like there on the market already. So it's not a like for like comparison. You've got to put it along that spectrum, if you like, of increased clinical benefits, increased risks, vice versa. So this is a really important thing. And I think that came through very strongly in this one. The other thing is you should be updating your data sets as soon as data becomes available, again, particularly for a pivotal study and a new device, where really the safety profile is not really known yet. And I think this not only is it important for patient safety, but of course it can save time and cost in the long run as well. Now, PMCF was kind of not really mentioned in much detail here. They as you said, I think you've raised the issues about PMCF very clearly. But clearly, PMCF is not a replacement for an adequate data set to support safety and performance in a Class 3 implantable device. Your basic data set has to be there first. So I think that's an important take-home message. It seems to me, as we've seen many times, is that the manufacturers are almost trying to push this through a little bit prematurely based on some fairly early data and kind of hoping for the best. You know, I can understand why, but, you know, I think they just have to bear in mind that there is a limit to that approach. And really, those are the key takeaways, Joe.
You know, Sally, I want to add one thing real quick.
Sure.
We may have been tempted to think that the rate of complications were higher because the initial early feasibility study data was included in here. Maybe the rates were higher there. Mm. But honestly, what I think is what really, and I've used this word before, what really spooked the expert panel was the data and the trending coming from the pivotal study, right? And this really brings into question, what is the appropriate time frame for initial CE marking? Most likely, approximately six-month data was provided for this review. But pivotal study data that was likely published was at a longer time frame than that. So something for manufacturers to bear in mind very carefully as far as the CDP is concerned and as far as initial CE marking is concerned as well, is what is that time frame that you can reliably comment on saying that all your primary residual risks have been mitigated for your device under evaluation? Just wanted to throw that in there as well, because that is a significant item. 6 months is not
Very
cutting
significant.
It
it's
for,
not.
Yeah, for this implantable device.
No,
anyway.
Certainly agreed.
Will do. Okay. Thank you very much, Sally. And
Thank
until
you,
next time.
As always.